It is my special pleasure to introduce our speaker this morning. Most of us know Pat Lykin as our fellowship administrator. However, you may not know that in a previous life, it was this life, but in a previous version of this life, Pat was a Greenpeace activist who found her way finally aboard ship. And in that time aboard ship, she also chained herself to harpoon boats in Japan and Peru to prevent them from killing whales. Pat is an inspiration for all of us in this congregation to stand up for what we believe, to put ourselves on the line. She acted on our Unitarian Universalist seventh principle by putting herself in harm's way to protect the independent web of all existence. Please join me this morning in welcoming Pat Lykin.
When I was 20 years old, I believed that I could change the world. Maybe not all by myself, but I'd heard about a group called Greenpeace, and I decided to join them. It had taken me 2 years to save up enough money and enough courage, but in 1978, I dropped out of college. I packed up my VW, and I drove from my hometown in Ohio across the country to San Francisco. Sometimes people have asked me why I wanted to save the whales, and I have difficulty articulating a complete answer to that question. I usually say something about the size of whales' brains. I point out that they were and are endangered, and the importance of their role in the ocean ecosystem. And I say that the largest creatures on the planet were being used for cat food and tennis racket strings. But sometimes I think it would be more honest to paraphrase Louis Armstrong, who, when he was asked to explain jazz, said, "If you have to ask, you'll never know." I sort of assume that Greenpeace had a hard time finding people willing to sit in those little inflatable boats called Zodiacs, willing to drive those boats in between the whales and the whaling ships, willing to use their bodies as human shields to prevent a whaler from firing a harpoon into a whale. But to my surprise, there were plenty of maniacs willing to do that. So when I arrived in the San Francisco office, they didn't immediately ship me off to sea, as I thought they would. Instead, I licked stamps, and I addressed envelopes, and I did a lot of volunteer work in the Greenpeace San Francisco office. I also participated in demonstrations and rallies. I learned to drive the Zodiacs, and I showed that I could stay calm under pressure and in unusual circumstances. When our ship, the Rainbow Warrior, was illegally boarded and detained in Spain, I led some of my fellow Greenpeacers in a protest at the Spanish Embassy in San Francisco. Now, let's see if this works. Yeah. Oh, thank you. We said that we wouldn't leave their embassy until their government released our ship. The police arrived, and I still have a very vivid memory of my friend Rusty explaining the concept of civil disobedience to the officers who really just wanted us to go home. She went on and on about Gandhi and Emerson and Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King Jr. until finally they relented and they arrested us for trespassing. Oops, I went the wrong way. Here we are. I'm the one closest to the paddy wagon there inviting people into it. We spent a very interesting evening in the San Francisco jail with two exotic dancers named Danielle and Indian Summer. And a particularly scary woman with a crew cut named Butch. And I know that the years have taken away the shock value of what I'm about to say, but if you can hearken back to 1979, she had a tattoo on her arm. It was terrifying. So Eventually, and finally, I earned a spot on board that same Greenpeace ship. So here you can see the big wooden wheel. It was a big old-fashioned wooden wheel to guide the ship. And I'm looking into the compass housing there to stay the course. And what a beautiful ship the Rainbow Warrior was. With a dark green hull, rainbows and doves arcing from the bow there. She was a North Sea trawler. And this was the same ship that would later be sunk in the Auckland Harbor by the French government in an attempt to stop Greenpeace from protesting nuclear tests at Maroa Atoll. French agents would place two limpet mines on the hull, sinking the ship and killing one of our crew members. But, of course, we didn't know this at the time. It was now 1981. And we were in the eastern tropical Pacific when we received a radio call that Peru had taken exception to an international whaling ban. Although the member nations of the International Whaling Commission had voted that whaling should stop, a nation could ignore this decision simply by declaring that it was taking exception. And under pressure from Japan, this is what Peru had done. So we set sail for Peru, with no clear idea of what to do when we got there. Ordinarily, Greenpeace likes to research and strategize before taking on a campaign, but in this case, we just didn't have the time. So we kind of made it up as we went along. Greenpeace Europe helped by flying out a Spanish translator to meet us in Lima. Rafaela was French, and she was gorgeous. She had a lovely French accent, and she had long, dark, flowing hair, and she wore lovely pink clothes that were forever somehow slipping off one shoulder or the other. Ooh. And meanwhile, the rest of us Greenpeace women had been at sea for a couple few months, and we wore scuzzy shorts and grungy T-shirts, and we took what little revenge we could by calling her Ralph. And this is not, this is just a partial picture of the crew there, and this does not do Ralph justice, but she's in the foreground there, and she's standing next to Apple in the white shirt, who's going to come into the story in a minute. And at the far end of this picture, in the yellow shirt, is our captain, Peter Wilcox. And Peter has written a book, and he is coming into Portland. He will be at Powell's Books. There's a little advertisement here. He'll be at Powell's Books on May 9th at 7:30. And I haven't seen him in over 30 years. So on Sunday, the 8th, I'm not going to be here because I'm going to be having a reunion with Peter. And at a staff meeting, I asked Reverend Sarah if it would be all right if I took that day off. And I said, my captain is coming into town, and I haven't seen him in 30 years. And Rebecca said, you have a captain? And I'm here on the far end. So there we were with Ralph in Lima, and we put together a plan of action that almost succeeded in repealing Peru's exception to the whaling ban. We successfully lobbied the equivalent of their Congress, and they voted to stop whaling. Well, we didn't know, and here is where a lack of research is a bad thing. Ultimately, this vote didn't count. The Minister of Fisheries took the vote into consideration, but he had the ultimate authority over that decision. And the Japanese whaling interests, of course, knew this, and they already had him in their pocket. So he overturned the decision. At that point, we decided to do what Greenpeace does best, direct action. We were sitting in the mess trying to decide our next step, and one of the guys said to me, tell us again what you did in Japan. A couple of years prior, I had boarded a whaling ship off the coast of Japan and chained myself to its harpoon gun. So there I am in the middle. The action had shut down whaling operations for 2 days, which had nicely coincided with the end of the whaling season. And it had generated headlines across Japan and elsewhere in the world. And ultimately, the authorities had decided that it was best not to call more attention to the matter, and I had been released without being charged. Unable to come up with any other suggestions, we decided to try this again. But this time there would be 7 of us instead of 1, 4 men and 3 women. Each of us would have a length of chain locked around our waist, and the plan was for each of us to loop the other end around the base of the harpoon gun and secure it with a lock. It's surprisingly easy to climb on board a whaling ship. This is a profile of, I just think they have such an evil-looking silhouette, whaling ship or killer boat. And you can see the harpoon in the bow. There's a catwalk that stretches from the harpoon gun to the bridge. So when you see somebody come out of the bridge, the harpooner comes out of the bridge, goes running down the catwalk, you know they've found a pod of whales and they're going to kill them. So, but look how low it is, midships and at the stern. It's really just a matter of climbing up and over. So, the tricky part is doing so without being seen by the crew members. And then once you're on board the ship, you have to go the full length of it to get up to the bow. So somehow the 7 of us needed to get from amidships to the harpoon gun in the bow. We needed a distraction. We needed Ralph. Yeah. So here's the plan we came up with. I still think it's a really clever plan. Ralph and our engineer, Apple, drove the Zodiac up to the port side of the whaling ship. Apple handcuffed himself to the railing of the ship. And Ralph, I don't know, she fluttered her eyelashes, and she explained that he was protesting whaling. And all the crew members on the deck converged on the port side of the ship. And meanwhile, the 7 of us drove up on the starboard side, and we climbed over the railings. And the crew was so focused on Ralph and Apple that all 7 of us made it to the bow of the ship, and before they were even aware that we were on board, each of us was chained to the harpoon gun. So in this picture, here's the Zodiac. You can see the outboard engine and Apple's head just beyond. We're looking at sort of the stern end there of the Zodiac. And the 7 of us are up at the bow. And by this time, now Ralph is actually walking back to join Apple here in the Zodiac. So by this time, the crew is well aware we're on board. So we've done it. I'm in the black shorts there. We assumed that the authorities would arrest us for trespassing, and we'd have an opportunity to explain our anti-whaling stance to the court and to the Peruvian people. This, again, is where a lack of research is a really bad thing. We weren't charged with run-of-the-mill, namby-pamby trespassing. We were charged with piracy. We had boarded the ship illegally without the captain's permission. We weren't trespassers. We were pirates. And that carried a sentence of from 6 to 20 years in a Peruvian prison. So we hired a Peruvian lawyer who knew how to work the system. And eventually, after several intense and frightening weeks, the charges were dropped. And 6 months later, thanks to coordinated international efforts, Peru agreed to stop whaling. Yay! So that was a lot of years ago, and eventually I went back to college and I went on to other things. But within the last few years, Greenpeace opened an office in Portland. And sometimes I do a little volunteer work with the organization. Here we are on the Burnside Bridge and the Age of Coal. I was responsible for the letter C, attached it to the railing and flipped it over and turned on the light. And here's another bridge but I am not on that bridge. This was the action taken last summer to protest the icebreaker Fenica from joining an oil rig. It was Fenica was going to join so it could break up the ice so the oil rig could drill in the Arctic. And I wasn't suspended from the bridge, but I was a kayakivist. I was in the water. My Greenpeace boats are getting smaller. And the action on both these bridges have to do with climate change, of course. It's the issue of our time. It's the fight of our lives. I'm pleased to say that Unitarian Universalists are also involved in this fight. A UU group called Commit to Respond combines the twin concerns of climate change and social justice to focus on climate justice, since the people who are disproportionately impacted are those in the poorer communities. You'll find information about Commit to Respond inside a box in the green insert in your order of service, and it includes a website that you can visit. It's certainly no surprise to me that UUs are involved with this, because as soon as I discovered Unitarian Universalism, I couldn't help but notice strong parallels with Greenpeace. For one thing, Greenpeace tends to attract strong-minded, free-thinking individuals who are not shy about expressing their opinions. Sound familiar? Okay. For another, whenever I meet a Greenpeacer or a Unitarian for the first time, I have the happy knowledge that we share some basic important values in common. Here is someone who cares about the earth. Here are people unlikely to make sexist or racist or homophobic comments. And if something needs to be done, an action needs to be taken, these people are often willing to stand up and do it. Both organizations are made up of people who choose to pay attention to the world and who are willing to do what they can to change it for the better. So, if you'll indulge me, if you've ever worked for the food backpack program for schools, or if you've helped with the beach cleanup, or if you've marched in a pride parade, please raise your hands for a moment. Please raise your hand if you've attended a peace rally or a Black Lives Matter rally or a public hearing about coal cars or the oil terminal, or if you're a raging granny. Raise your hand if you're involved in the Green Sanctuary group or if you compost or you recycle. Raise your hand if you've donated food to Toucans Against Hunger or blankets or coats or Christmas gifts for the farm workers or participated in letter writing for human rights. Raise your hand if you've donated during Share the Basket Sundays. Raise your hand if you've joined a facilities work party, if you've pulled ivy or replaced light bulbs or been a kitchen keeper or gotten up on the roof to clear the standing water, or if you've helped with the art gallery or with CareNet or you've run the sound. Raise your hand if you've served as an usher in this church or a greeter or a board member or a moderator or an RE teacher or an adult, or you've led adult RE. If you've sung with the choristers, played an instrument, given a sermon, worked on a stewardship campaign or the auction or another fundraiser, if you've made coffee, if you've brought flowers, if you've washed dishes or served soup, welcomed a new visitor, worked on a committee or two or 14, please raise your hand. And finally, please raise your hand if you have given your time, your money, or your talents to this congregation. And that's why I am proud to work as your congregational administrator. You are a people who think big and who care deeply and who act on your beliefs when and where you can. It's the reason why I worked for Greenpeace, and it's the reason why I work for this fellowship. It's the reason why, all these decades later, I still believe that we can change the world. So, it's yo-ho, yo-ho, a Unitarian Universalist life for me.